You know what it's like when we see a rainbow? You know that feeling? Like, it's like, oh, there's a rainbow. There's that joy. There's that delight, sort of childlike. And it seems to happen to all of us, doesn't it? And there's, you know, just the beauty of it and the mystery of it, the translucence, the changing colors. Where does it end? Have you ever chased a rainbow? Looked for the pot of gold? Anybody have any luck? Got close? Yeah, it's always close, right? So today, we're going to chase rainbows, spot rainbows, chase them, and find pots of gold. Does that sound like fun? All right, good, we're in. So you've probably seen this rainbow before. It's the rainbow flag that is used for pride. This is called the Progress Pride flag. The one in 1978 that was created just had the colors, not this triangle that I'm going to talk about in a minute. Had 8 colors, but they ran out of fabric colors, and so it got whittled down to 6. But the colors are, the red is for life, the orange is for healing, the yellow is for sunlight, the green is for nature, the blue is for serenity, and the purple is for spirit. And it was created by Gilbert Baker, who was asked at the urging of Harvey Milk to make this in 1978. Anybody ever heard of Harvey Milk? Whoa! Ask that question around San Francisco, right? You get a room full of hands. If you don't know, he was actually one of the first openly gay elected officials in the United States. He served on the Board of Supervisors and was a big advocate for gay rights in San Francisco. And so it was in 1978, the same year that he was assassinated, sadly, that he asked Gilbert Baker to make this flag. So it also kind of carries that with it as well. And he asked him to, he didn't ask him to make a flag, he asked him to make a symbol for gay pride. And this is what Gilbert Baker came up with. But what he came up with did not include this part, which was created by someone else in 2018, Daniel Quasar. And this is about where we are now in our progress. This is about what we have yet to work on. And so the triangle is to, and the arrow is actually pointing toward our progress. And what do we, where are the areas that we really have to work more on, where there's still a lot of prejudice and discrimination, is these three that are about being non-binary or transgender. So the term cisgender means I'm male or female, I fit into a category and that's how I identify. Transgender means, you know, I might be shifting my gender. And non-binary is like, I'm gender fluid. I'm not saying I'm male or female. I'm not fitting into one of those areas. The brown and the black represent people of color who have often been discriminated within the LGBTQ community. So that's our forward progression and the current progress pride flag. And we'll have this flying somewhere on our property for throughout pride. So the word pride is interesting, and it was chosen specifically for a reason, and that reason is because it counters the word shame. So anyone, of course, can feel shame, right? Probably if you're a human being walking about the earth, you have felt shame at some point in your life. It is so much a shadowy kind of feeling that a lot of us will say, oh no, I don't feel shame, right? Because nobody wants to feel that way. Because shame has with it a belief that says, I something wrong with me, right? That I'm not okay, essentially. That those two live together. The social science researcher Brené Brown says this, she does a lot of work around shame. She said, if you put shame into a petri dish, it needs 3 things to grow exponentially: secrecy, silence, and judgment. And if you think about those 3, the secrecy, keeping secrets about ourselves, right, being in the closet, so to speak, about something, not wanting to break silence, perhaps on the behalf of others because we're afraid. But what are we afraid of? That third one, judgment, really is what everything arises from, right? We're afraid of being judged. We're afraid of being ostracized. And so this idea of shame, living with the shadowy belief, I'm not worthy, is what kind of stirs up all this stuff. And judgment is there, kind of behind it all, if you will. So part of what this insidious shame in its growing petri dish is all about is our desire to belong. And a lot of times we get this misperception of what belonging is, and we think belonging is fitting in. But belonging isn't necessarily about fitting in. Belonging is just being a part of, right? Being welcomed to be a part of something, to be a part of a community. It doesn't necessarily require us to give over ourselves, but a lot of times that's how it's perceived or understood, or what we fear, the judgment. So we start to hide or to suppress certain parts of ourselves then to fit in. Anybody relate to this? Anybody ever done this in your life? Anybody been to seventh grade? In my early career, I worked for a place called the Teachers Academy for Math and Science, and it was a really exciting place for me to work. In fact, I campaigned for that job for a year, and I was so excited when I landed it because to me, it was this mix. It was being part of the Chicago school reform movement, which was really alive at the time. So that felt exciting, and I liked the mission. And then we were teaching cutting-edge methods for teachers so that kids were getting, you know, really getting excited about subjects that they normally didn't, math and science. But what I think I probably liked the most about the place I worked was that it was the most racially diverse team that you could ever imagine of coworkers, and I think there was like probably well over 100 of us, and it was so fun to work together because we always came up with better ideas because of the diverse backgrounds, because of the diverse experiences. We always came up with richer ideas and experiences and possibilities for people. Plus, we just had a lot of fun together. So it's interesting that I was so excited about this rich, diverse environment, and at the same time, I was exploring and expressing and coming into a part of myself that was new. I was in my first relationship with a woman. But I feared so much losing the things I loved, or losing people I loved, or losing this workplace, perhaps, that I loved, that I kept it a secret. And that secret was just harboring in very uncomfortable ways. Like, for example, when naturally my coworkers and I were having lunch and somebody would start talking about dating or marriage, and I would start to get really uncomfortable. And I'd change the subject, or I'd just wiggle in my chair, or I'd get up to get a drink of water, whatever I could do to avoid that topic. And so I lived with this secret for 2 years in this relationship before I told my childhood friends, my family, or my coworkers. And then one day, something switched. You know, it was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't live as a house divided anymore. I can't hide my joy or hide my relationship or hide this part of myself anymore. And so I began one by one telling people, and guess what? Nothing blew up. Nothing got destroyed. Nobody stopped loving me, even. People were disappointed, some family members were disappointed, but we worked through that in time, I think. I hope. I don't know. Let's say we did, yeah, because this is really all about coming into ourselves, right? So, ultimately, I don't mean this in a callous way, it doesn't matter. I mean, because we need to be sovereign within who we are, and that's actually where we're headed. So I know much worse has happened to many people. Many people have taken much greater risks to come out in whatever way, and when I say come out, I don't just mean LGBTQ, I mean come out, right? In whatever ways that you might be the keeper of a secret about yourself. In whatever ways you may have something that's sort of spinning around in that space of shame and the belief of not worthy. And so we want to move to that place. And what happens in that moment when we wake up, when we recognize or we say, you know what? I can't do this anymore. I can't be this way anymore. I can't be divided, or I can't feel tight and confined, or I can't keep keeping myself small or limited, whatever it is that we're doing. That moment comes. Aeneas Nen said it best. She said, and the day came when to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. That's what happens for us, isn't it? Have you been there before? You've been to that place, that edge, and it's like, I can't do this anymore. I can't stay in this tight little space anymore. I have to break out. I have to blossom. I have to be willing to take the risk. And that's the day when the shame comes out of the shadow and into the divine light. And more of the truth of who we are than is known and felt and experienced and expressed. You are a unique soul made by a wise and loving source. In being that unique soul is absolutely essential to the world at large. It may not seem like it. You might think there's 8 billion of us. What does it matter if I just hide my light under a bushel basket, so to speak? It matters a lot, right? Because the world needs that light shining on the hill, as Jesus talked about. That world needs that bright beam of light that you are. And you can't be that bright beam of light if there are parts of you, gems of you, qualities of you that you're holding back, suppressing, limiting in some way. So if you are at that place maybe of wanting to blossom, or you're aware of some parts of yourself anyway that could be let out of the closet, so to speak, I want to encourage you today to let them out. Step out. Open the door. I hear sighs. You don't have to wait till it's too painful to take the risk. You can go ahead and take the risk now. Take it in a safe space like this one. Take it in a place in community. Take your first step there. And then you can take another and another and another, and it becomes really easy then. Authenticity is the quality I chose when I was in ministerial school. We were invited to choose a quality at the very beginning that is kind of what we're opening to, what we want ministerial school to be about, what we want these next couple years together to be about. And that can always be something we claim for ourselves. You know, we often get a white stone at the beginning of the year, where it's always worthy for us to take that time to reflect and to say, what is the spiritual quality I want to embody right now? So I say that authenticity, 24 years in the making, and it is still a work in progress for me. You know that feeling? We are always evolving, right? We are always evolving. It may seem like we never arrive, but we do have points of arrival on the spiritual journey. Essentially, though, the spiritual journey is more about evolving than it is arriving. And if we can embrace that and say, it's really about being in that ever-growing, becoming process, not about being a, you know, finished product with a big bow, you know, although we love it when those things happen. And there are those moments. During my sabbatical, there were moments where I felt completely returned to myself. It was like, wow. And that feeling is so good. It's so, wow. You know, just moving around going, wow, I am myself. This feels pretty good. And when you are in that space, it's like there's such completeness. There's such wholeness. There's such sovereignty. We need nothing. It's like, wow, this feels really good. It's like all those little pieces of ourselves that we've cast out in every direction, right? The pieces that we rejected, the pieces of ourselves that we gave over because we gave our power to someone else, the pieces that we took on that weren't us at all. We were trying to be like Jimmy or Sally or Joey or whoever, you know, instead of being ourselves. And so as we step in more and more as we take, for in my case, it was taking time apart, right? Taking time apart and recognizing, oh, all these pieces of me are everywhere. The pieces that we put out in service to others, right? To meeting other people's needs. We start getting like really busy with that, don't we? Do you ever have that experience? You're taking care of, you know, whatever, people in your home, your family, you're taking care of people at your work, and you're just running all over the place, and it's like all of a sudden you just go, where am I? Who am I? And then you breathe into that, and it's like all the pieces come back. It feels good to be whole. It feels good to be complete. And it might involve a little risk to get there. And every time you do it, it'll be worth it. So as we come back into our wholeness, as we come back to ourselves, you know, as you can contemplate yourself and your journey, how about you? Where are you in that journey? Do you feel scattered? Do you feel like your energies are scattered, that bits and pieces of you have been given over? Do you feel whole and complete? What will it take for you to shift? Are you giving too much of yourself away? Are you giving your power over? Are you making somebody else's life your project? It's a disservice to them as well as to you if you are. Let yourself be whole, and then you can meet another in their wholeness. You can see their wholeness. Then we aren't looking through brokenness and seeing brokenness. Audre Lorde was an author and activist, and she self-described as Black, lesbian, feminist, warrior, mother. She said this, "If I didn't define myself for myself, I would be crunched into other people's fantasies for me and eaten alive." We don't want that, do we? We need to define ourselves for ourselves so we can be in that place of strength. How do you define yourself? I invite you to close your eyes for a moment and seek, because when we do that, we drop into spirit, and when we drop into spirit, we get the real wisdom. And as you breathe into that space that is the presence of the divine, you can ask yourself, what are my qualities? How do I show up at my best? Define yourself for yourself, so you don't get crunched up into other people's fantasies of who you are. We have to know who we are in our hearts, or we'll start negotiating ourselves with other people. Brené Brown says this, "Our worth and our belonging are not negotiated with other people. We carry those inside of our hearts. I know who I am," she says. "I'm clear about that, and I will not negotiate that with you." Pretty powerful, isn't it? Can you feel yourself in that space of that last bit that's on the screen? I know who I am, I'm clear about that, and I will not negotiate that with you. It's a place to get to if we're not there yet. And so I want to invite you to drop back in, and I'll give you these words and say these to yourself if you wish. I know who I am. I'm clear about that. And I will not negotiate myself. I think unnegotiated souls are better at embracing and celebrating diversity. Because if you think about it, if you're not boxed in anymore, if you're not allowing others to define who you are and categorize you or ostracize you or whatever, tell you who you need to be, if you're freed of that, you're not going to want to imprison someone else in a box. You're not going to otherize other people or ostracize other people because you have no need anymore. You're not living in that little limited ego space anymore. You're living in a space of the fullness of who you are, the true self that you are, the true self you are as a unique soul, and the true self you are as the divine big S self, right? Because that's right behind that. That's that deeper look into that. So when we're returned then to our whole selves, we lose interest in that game. And we delight instead in the rainbow of diversity that is all around us. We delight in all the differences, allowing, expressing, and celebrating those as they are. And yet still, knowing all of this, we can slip into that divisiveness and separation consciousness and otherizing when it comes to certain aspects of life. There's a lot of that that, you know, is present in our world today around ideology. But Audre Lorde brings us back again, and she says, we must recognize that difference is a reason for celebration and growth rather than for destruction. It's not our differences that divide us. That's the important thing we need to remember. It's not the differences that divide us. It's our ability to recognize and accept and celebrate those differences. So are there differences that you are allowing to divide and separate you from others? And can you find the bridge? Not about excusing bad behavior, not about not accountability, that's a totally different thing. But it is about finding the ways that you can be a bridge. And we've got those tools right here, right? Meditation, prayer, heart math, the ability to see the divine in one another. Diversity enriches us. It's a pot of gold in and of itself. When we are in a space of diversity, we are more curious, more interesting, more multidimensional. We're more multi-talented, we're more compassionate, we're more creative. And so it brings us all of those gifts. And basically, if you think about a rainbow, one single color does not a rainbow make, right? We need all those colors to have a rainbow, and we all love rainbows. We all want rainbows, don't we? I can't think of a single soul that wouldn't want to see a rainbow. And so it's that knowing, that delight, that magic, that joy to recognize it's the diversity that brings forth that to some degree. So diversity and inclusivity, these things go hand in hand, right? Inclusivity is a value we hold at Unity very closely. It's a attitude of welcome. It's an action. It's a way of being inclusive. As a spiritual practice, inclusivity then sees more deeply into oneness and holds that space of oneness. It's like we allow ourselves to be able to see in two different ways. One is I celebrate your unique soul expression. I celebrate the beauty of our diversity. And the other is I recognize we're all one. No. So when people say, like, for example, I'm colorblind. I didn't notice that you were another color. No, doesn't help. That's not good. Doesn't feel good to somebody. I haven't been seen is what that person will think. You're hurting my feelings. You have not seen who I am, which means you don't have any idea what my experience has been. So diversity, seeing in that way, is important. Right? It's part of that celebration of all the expressions. And yet we can also hold that space of oneness. Jesus was a master teacher of inclusivity. And this is why Jesus is such a good teacher for Unity, because his basic teachings were love, inclusivity, and the power to heal. if you've been around Unity for a while, it's like, that's a pretty good summary. And so Jesus embodied inclusivity. He always included in his circle these people who were looked down upon in the culture of his day. Amongst his circle were tax collectors and prostitutes, Samaritans and Gentiles. Amongst his circle were lepers and women. I'm just saying. And women were a significant part of his posse. They were contributors and disciples. In fact, it's his closest companion was Mary Magdalene. Do you know when he and Mary Magdalene met, she had a mental illness? And that's what was meant by the seven demons that were cast out, and she was healed. Some say Mary Magdalene became his wife, including our co-founder, Charles Fillmore. We don't know for sure, and that I don't want to sidetrack us too much. But the point is that Jesus was somebody who didn't see, who celebrated the differences and saw the oneness, who celebrated and didn't distinguish between race and class and gender and so on in terms of being welcome, being included in the circle, and that oneness that is shared by all of us. He showed us how to see from the nature of the Christ within us. And he did that especially by telling us how. He said, judge not, lest you be judged. And he said, first remove the log from your own eye before you can remove the speck, or help remove the speck from your neighbor's eye. The log from your own eye. I mean, that is really something, isn't it? So in some versions, it's the plank, but, you know, still pretty big. Still pretty hard to see past that, right? And what will we see when we remove that? What do we see when we remove the log or the plank from our eye of judgment? Everything. Everything. Yeah. I like that even better. I was going to say beauty. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but everything. Because that is, we see as God sees, right? We see the diversity. We see the beauty. We see the beauty of the word. We see the truth. We see the spiritual truth that is beyond the physicality in the third dimension, and we bring it in. And we feel it, and we know it in our bones, and we say, wow, I am more than this. I am this body, and I am more than this. I am this mind, and I am more than this. I am this heart, and I am more than this. I am part of that whole divine love, pulsating love throughout the universe. I am part of the divine intelligence of the universe. I am the body of Christ, the body of all of us, the body of Mother Earth. Everything. Thank you. You just opened up everything. Yeah, when we are able to see, we see all of it. And when we see in that way, it brings us back to who we are. It's plain and simple, right? And when we are returned to ourselves, we are so much better for the world. It's so hard for us sometimes to wrap our heads around because we're so stuck in the physical ways of seeing things and the ego ways of seeing things. I have a need, you have a need, we're going to fulfill each other's needs. You know, that's good. It's a part. It's a start. And it's so much more than that. Instead, it's like, I'm whole. Are you whole? Let's work on getting you whole because I'm feeling whole. I'm feeling complete. I want to hang out with folks that feel complete and whole. Because when we both feel complete and whole, we can just go out into the world and have fun. We can spot rainbows and chase them till we find pots of gold. And guess what? We're going to find the pots of gold when we are whole, when we are centered in the truth of who we are, because now we can see everything. Then we might have tripped over the pot of gold and we wouldn't even known it was there because it wasn't third dimensional. But now we're multidimensional beings because we stepped into the truth of who we are and we see as God sees. And so we can see everything. Yeah, it's good stuff, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yes. So this journey is personal authenticity and celebrating diversity. And when we start in those two places, those rainbows of who we are individually and who we are as a collective, we follow them. And at the end of the rainbow of our personal authenticity, we find wholeness. And at the end of the rainbow of celebrating diversity, we find oneness. And oneness and wholeness are pots of gold that we can take to the eternal bank over and over and over again and be prospered the rest of our lives and the rest of our soul expressions to eternity. That's what it's about. So let's take the logs out of our eyes so we can see everything, who we are, who the person next to us is, who the people who yank our chain are, and the whole human family, and then all life and beyond. That's the journey we're on together. Let unity be our laboratory. Let unity be the place where we create heaven on earth, where people step in and they say, whoa, these folks are whole, and I feel a part, and I'm remembering now who I am. Can we be that together? We're going to have to get more seating. Let's affirm together. I have seen the rainbow of diversity and found the pot of authentic gold. I am unapologetically inclusive. I am truly me, and so it is.